sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. Patricia, a sexual authenticity coach and a Jersey girl turned Minnesotan, and I, Judy, a health educator, advocate, and podcaster, a lifelong Minnesota girl, get together and talk about sex.
Does matter, people. Yes, it does.
All right. Well, we have a listener question this week.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to read it. And then I'm in my little researching, I found an interesting paragraph that I'm going to read after I read the question. So cause it's kind of, it was a funny little connection. So this question comes from Justine. And thank you, Justine, for sending in your question. The question is, is BDSM a healthy sexual activity? As a feminist, I'm instantly turned off. How can this be a loving sexual dynamic? So that is her question. And looking at the history, and there's quite a history of BDSM, and we'll define that in a minute here, but I found this paragraph and it was just funny that this worked out this way. So here's the paragraph. In 1791, the French Marquis de Sade published the first SM novel. The novel was called Justine. Coincidentally enough.
How incredible.
I know. I thought that was wild. Which included whipping, flogging, nipple clamping, and restraints. His name gave us sadism, the word sadism. De Sade was imprisoned for criminal insanity. One reason many people consider the sexual practices he popularized crazy. So there's a little history, and this is an article from Psychology Today that actually talks about ancient Greeks depicting BDSM and the Kama Sutra, actually, as well. So erotic spanking, all sorts of things. So, all right. That's our question. We're going to start by actually laying some foundation of what is BDSM. Let's just first of all, look at those words. What do those letters mean? What do those words mean? And what is it?
Yes. Very, very important that we talk about what it is and what it's not before talking about whether it's healthy or whether it can be a loving relationship. Because anything out of context is dangerous, right? So we want to just give information first about the acronym BDSM and some of the statistics behind it and talk about what it entails, what it doesn't, and some of the parameters around it before we get into the relationship type stuff. So when you think of BDSM, Judy, what comes to your mind?
When I think of that, probably the first thing I think of is sort of leather, whips. I think of, oh gosh, what was the book and movie? Rosie O'Donnell was in it. And I just, for some reason, that's one of the I think of her in her leather outfit. Running around. But I think, yeah, when I think of it, that's kind of what I think of. I think of some of the leather gear. And I think of sort of less so much the act of what people are doing, but the attitude. And that probably comes more from media and that kind of thing. But that's where my mind first goes.
So if you look at the letters BDSM, first is the BD. So it's bondage and denial. Okay. Then it's the DS, which is domination submission. And then it's the SM, which is sadist and masochist. So it's all kind of lumped together, those letters, and then they break up in their little pairs as to how they, you know, bondage, domination, sadism, masochism. You throw in the submission in there, the denial, all that kind of stuff, and it all comes together. It is According to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, version number 5, BDSM is no longer considered a mental health issue. Actually, it's quite the opposite. They've actually found that there are a lot of health benefits that come from BDSM relationships. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where I really wanted to mention that BDSM relationships are defined by two people, a top and a bottom. Top is the person who gives or is the more dominant person or the deliverer of, say, a spank or tasks or whatever. And the bottom is the receiver or the act, the person who is supposed to act upon or whatever is given as a task. So top and bottom. These can be any sex. They can be any, they can be bisexual. They can be cross-dressers, transgender people, male on male, female on male on female, any mixed match, whatever. But they are two consensual, responsible adults who communicate and trust and do these massive negotiations before entering any kind of scene. That's a responsible BDSM relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right. And like you say, there's communication, there's prize.
And when you talk about, you know, when people are like polled as far as how many people are involved in BDSM these days, it is a huge gap. I mean, the pollster who ran this would probably more than likely get fired, basically. The gap is from 2% to 62% of individuals have partaken in some form of BDSM.
Wow, that is interesting.
Isn't it? Yeah. It's not a sickness. Nobody's mentally ill. They're not perverted. That's how it used to be looked at. Like you were talking about the Dasad. That's where a lot of our concepts around BDSM come from, is this ancient stuff that's been kind of passed along, and yet it's been being done in secret for years and years and years and years. Mm-hmm. These big elaborate mansion parties and a lot of warehouses, and I mean, anywhere people get together who consider themselves BDSM, there's going to be a good old-fashioned spanking somewhere.
Can I add one thing in there?
Sure.
In the whole statement of the being involved in BDSM does not equal mental illness. However, there can be people who are mentally ill involved in BDSM.
Looking for approval, looking for acceptance, looking for filling a void, absolutely, which is why it's so, so very important to be sexually authentic and know who you are, what you need, what you want before entering any kind of BDSM situation.
And that can be in any, I mean, we know.
Anything. I have another little survey here that, you know, as humans, we've always kind of had this penchant for adventurous sex, and that Durex, the condom company, found that 36% of adults admitted to using some form of bondage during lovemaking. Even as far back as 1956, it revealed 50% of men and 55% of women enjoy erotic biting.
Mm-hmm.
All the way back to the 50s, it was noted that 50% of individuals participated in some form of BDSM. It's a lot more common than we think.
Exactly. And has been throughout the years, and hasn't necessarily, you know, again, it hasn't all been abusive relationships or abusive situations. It's, I think on Dan Savage calls it cops and robbers. What does he say? Cops and robbers for adults with their clothes off.
There you go. That's a power exchange there, right? And it clearly defines a good guy, bad guy, or top bottom situation. Absolutely. Right. That's a really great way to look at it. So, but I want to mention that there are some really positive benefits to BDSM, especially in the area of mental health. Now, I know you brought up that sometimes mental health can be a factor for people going into it, but people who participate in healthy BDSM relationships often show general well-being. They are not as sensitive to rejection. They have increased extroversion. They are conscientious. They have lower depression, anxiety, PTSD, lower borderline pathologies and paranoia. They are subjective and open to experiences. That sounds like a pretty mentally healthy person to me.
Right. So what do you think makes that the case?
What do I think? I think that there is a lot to be learned through a BDSM relationship. The idea of stepping into your power, whether you're a top or a bottom, or you need to figure that out, the person who can do both is called a switch. They are really working towards a better understanding, and the goal is to bring your partner to absolute pleasure. The goal in BDSM, the goal in any of those dynamics that I talked about in the beginning, is for the top to fall into flow. And flow is a place of reduced self-consciousness and optimal performance. And they're getting the attention of being in control and being in charge and doing these wonderful things to your body and bringing you to absolute pleasure. The bottom, the goal for the bottom in most cases, is subspace or transient hyperfrontality. And that is this feeling of transcendence, being out of your body, floating, a reduced sense of pain, ironically. Your body, you know, the chemicals of your body start releasing endorphins and things, and it actually gives you sort of an out-of-body experience. That's like the coup de grace right there of a BDSM scene where someone gets to that heightened level. And when you're in a BDSM relationship, you don't have to set goals, but when it happens, you know you've got something special. You know you've gotten to a really amazing place of release, of letting go, of trust, connection. So much of it comes down to connection.
Mm-hmm.
And trust.
Right. So you have to walk into, be able to express your desires, your interests, and let somebody have that much power over you, or to, you know, well, to let somebody have that much power over you in a sense, or to do things to you, you have to trust them. You have to trust that they're going to take care of you, that their ultimate goal is, like you say, to bring you pleasure. So their job is to be aware of you and to take care of you. And then as a top, trusting yourself and being in that space and being focused to be with that person and to provide them that.
Yeah. It's incredible. There's incredible responsibility. It's like hyper-vigilant responsibility on a top. You are ultimately, you have this person's life in your hands. I'm not saying it has to be that extreme, mm-hmm. but in some cases it is. You know, they're actually... can be times where it's extremely unsafe and without consent. I mean, some people just like to live on the edge of that kind of thing, but it is the top's responsibility to call it off if it's getting too dangerous, if the bottom is beyond what they can take and they're just being stubborn or something. Like the bottom has the ultimate control always, because they can always call it off.
Mm-hmm.
All they have to do is use their safe word. Always should have a safe word. And when that word is spoken, there's no questions, no judgment, no shame, no nothing. It just means you stop. The scene's over, done.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it. That's as much as I can take, whatever. Or I'm not feeling it. You just use your safe word. You're out, done. And the top has this responsibility to read the bottom. I'm generally a top. In my life, I'm a very dominant personality, a dominant woman. I have been paid to be a dominant. I can read a person's body better than they can sometimes by the amount of perspiration, by the way they're breathing, by a certain look on their face, by the relaxation of their muscles, by what they're doing with their feet. I'm watching everything, and it's my responsibility to make sure that it's a pain/pleasure experience, that the bottom is getting what we negotiated in the beginning. There's so much communication involved to know what they like, what they don't like, what they're looking for, what they've experienced in the past. Have they ever had medical history stuff? Do they have a bad back? Do they have a bad neck? Have they ever blacked out in any kind of situation? You know, it's almost like doing a football physical, you know, before you actually play, you know. And this is for just scenes. Now, if you're in a relationship with somebody, you learn these intricate things about each other, and you know each other so well that you don't have to have all that conversation ahead of time, that you just kind of build upon the things you already know, or you push the limits where you can, or you lean into what they like, or you push them in places where you know they could go a little further. You know, it's just kind of a different type of dynamic. But
that trust has to be there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about, because even in this definition, there's a lot of things that are like left open as to what does all this mean. So I just want to call some of them out and you can talk about them. So, you know, we've talked about I want to have you talk a little bit more about what those acts might look like, what might be included in a scene with somebody. And also one of the things, like you mentioned, some people are doing this in life. It's not just, you know, with a flog or whatever. So what might that look like a little bit in life? You know, person that I know is a submissive and I've never seen her in leather because she's wearing whatever you wear to have lunch with somebody. Right. So, talk about that a little bit, and then talk about the difference of you've got a scene at a party versus what happens with your partner, maybe your lifelong partner. Like, how might those two things look different and the same? And you just described that a little bit of you when you're with a new person, you've got all this information to kind of collect and consider. And when you have a consistent person, you can continue that negotiation, but you know each other so well.
Okay, so let me start with a scene. Oftentimes a scene is something, I would say for myself as a dominant woman doing scenes with others, it generally happens at a BDSM party or some sort of event where there is trusted equipment, there is plenty of things at your disposal or you have your own bag, you bring your own toys, your own implements, which might be floggers or paddles or clothespins. And there's so many. I mean, I could rattle off a huge list, but, and maybe that's a whole nother, maybe we could do video podcast one where we could go through some of the toys so people could actually see what they are. That would probably be a better way to do that. If you were to go on the internet and look up BDSM toys, it could be anything from an anal hook or an anal plug to cuffs and, you know, for your ankles and your wrists. It's rope, it's vibrators, dildos, anything and anything that you could provide pain and pleasure with. Sometimes it's kitchen utensils. Sometimes it's garden utensils. You know, one of my favorites is this pair of pork shredders that I got from Pampered Chef. And I like to use them down a man's back. You know, they just, ooh, like it's better than fingernails any day. And they remember.
That's what you need. The Pampered Chef sex party.
think of all the spatulas and the, you know, all the different stuff you can do.
So, oh my gosh, what fun. What a great way when they do those fundraising, like, you know, buy Pampered Chef for, you know, raising money for breast cancer. Like, well, this is like, there you go.
You know, as a dom, I have told people, a submissive, to, I'd give them $10 and I'd say, go to the dollar store and find 10 things for a dollar that you want me to use on your body. Mm-hmm. And then they go and they bring it and I get to be creative and do whatever I deem necessary with whatever they've brought me.
So another thing you're describing there that I want to point out, mm-hmm. it is that whole, it's not just the moment, it's the up to, it's the planning, it's the preparation. It's that's for so many people, that's where excitement comes, right? That's where it's all being built up, right?
And and I think that kind of leads into the 24/7 thing, because even if you're not in a relationship, but you really dig BDSM, you don't walk through the hardware store like a normal person anymore. The plumbing section, the hardware section, they really, really, painters, tarps. I mean, I get really excited when I walk through a hardware store these days. It's really, really kind of crazy that, you know, I walk through the cleaning supplies and I'm like, oh yeah, we need some disinfectant, not for the house, but for my toys. You know, mm-hmm. like there's certain things that, you unlock a certain area of your mind when you start to think about this kind of stuff creatively, when you're thinking about providing somebody else's pleasure, or when you're anticipating your own. So mm-hmm. it's like this huge foreplay. It's this wonderful playground in your mind that you just get to live in all the time. You can shut it off. You can put it aside if you're not addicted. You know, obviously we want to talk about the idea of sexual addiction. That is a problem. But if you're not caught up in an addiction thing, like you can go to Sexaholics Anonymous or whatever, or AA, and find their sex addiction checklist. It's more about not being able to function without it. You know, like you can't have your relationships with your friends are suffering. You can't hold a job because you're constantly whacking off or whatever else. That's addiction. I'm talking about it's just a playful space in your mind where you get to stay sexually ramped up and live in your sexual essence and your creativity. It's a form of expression. It's extremely healthy. It's a nice release. It's a great way to keep your mind sensual, because you're constantly plugged into sensation, especially BDSM sensation. It makes you a sensual being because everything is about sensation. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk a little bit more about the scene thing. And this is where I'll bring up my birthday experience. So I said, I'm a dominant. So I'm a top for most instances. In my marriage, we make love most times, but sometimes I'm a top and sometimes I'm the bottom. So we go back and forth. That we play. That's how we call what we call we play. Mm-hmm. But when I am down in the cities and I go to an event or something, I make a choice. And this past party that I went to, I chose to bottom it. It's my birthday, and I was celebrating with a couple of other dominant friends. Again, we were all these dominant personalities together. Well, when you get a bunch of dominants together, somebody's got to be the submissive. Somebody's got to be the bottom, top bottom, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we were doing birthday spanks is pretty much how it worked out. So I'm turning 49 on the 15th, and I got my 49 spanks as I bottomed for this party. And it was amazing. My husband wasn't there. My girlfriend, my female friend, very close friend, she was my top. It was extremely sensual, but not sexual. It was all about me feeling like release and purge. Like I chose going in that was what I needed in that evening, in that moment. I really wanted to just have a tension release, a frustration release. Like, this past year has been a little tough. So I was just like, yeah, let me just get all that out and just into next year already. Let's just do this. You know, I don't do that often. I think it was about 3 years ago since I bottomed last to anybody other than my husband. But, you know, you can pick and choose. It doesn't have to be all one way or all another way. If we're living in our sexual authenticity, we decide. We choose what we want. And we stand in our power to say that. And if somebody's not respecting our boundaries, our expectations, our negotiations, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't be in a BDSM relationship with that person.
Right. Right. Ever. And I want to call back to something you said, because I am, for some people, I think this could be new information in the whole idea that BDSM or a scene, it isn't necessarily the act of sex isn't necessarily happening, and probably most likely isn't like at a BDSM party, that kind of thing. People who go to a dominatrix. I knew a woman who was a dominatrix in California years ago, and she never had sex with a single one of her clients. That was not, you know, she was a married person in a monogamous relationship.
Yeah.
And so
I've been paid as a dominatrix, and it's a lot of times it's when a man comes to a female for dom services, they might think there's going to be sex, but you're very clear in setting that up before even setting an appointment or whatever. You know, there's a lot of, again, negotiation and stuff that goes into it. And I will bring them to the point that they are like ready to ejaculate, and I will tell them they can't. Mm-hmm. They're not allowed. Mm-hmm. Nope. And then I whip them in the balls or their nipples or whatever, and bring them back to reality real quick. Like, that ain't happening here. That's not what this is about. This is about you taking what you're getting from me, and then you can go home and do that. You go home and you can whack off or whatever else. This is about sensuality. This is about pain to the brink of pleasure. There's a very fine line, just like between love and hate, there's a really fine line. The fine line between pain and pleasure is just as thin,
right,
if you allow it.
And again, like you said, somebody's paying you, all of those things you have done to them have been negotiated beforehand.
Yep.
So you're not doing anything to them they don't want to have done.
No. And it's funny that, you know, being a dominatrix, it's considered sex work. Mm-hmm. It's all about the business of pleasure. It is not about sex. And it's frustrating to me because it's a service. Many people who are in especially high stress jobs, or who are very introverted and don't know how to relate to people, or don't know how to pick up a girl at a bar, or don't feel comfortable going on dates, they need the attention. They need a connection. They want a release. They want to be disciplined. Some people really feel like they have that. There was this one, a client of mine who he'd been divorced for a couple of years, and he had finally kind of come into how rough it was on his ex-wife. And he felt like he really just needed to be spanked. Like that he really understood what he needed to be spanked by a woman. And he wanted me to degrade him and tell him, you know, don't you ever do this to another woman again, and all this other kind of stuff. And who the hell do you think you are? And you know, have him crawling around naked, you know, whatever. Whatever. But it's all negotiated ahead of time. He pretty much knew the script before I even said it. But I'm dressed up. Everything's covered. He doesn't get to see anything. And instead he's there barely dressed and getting his nipples tortured or a gag in his mouth so that he can't speak to me because he doesn't deserve to. You know, some people really just want to be told that stuff. It's fantasy. It's stuff they've seen. It's kind of a turn on to have a woman take charge. Mm-hmm. You know, in this world that we live in now, that's kind of topsy-turvy. There's a lot more female-led relationships. There's a lot more femdoms and stuff out there, which I think we're going to talk about a little further in the podcast. But
I mean, and I don't want to get into the whole where do kinks or the desire for, you know, for to be dominated or humiliated come from, but there's a lot of theories, and there's people who can describe or feel like they have come sometimes even from a religious upbringing or, you know, various things like that, that is what has made them need this and find a great release/relief.
Well, think about the visualizations that we have from some of our religious stuff. Mm-hmm. Think about the crown of thorns or being whipped with a cat of nine tails or carrying a cross or, you know, I know I'm specifically talking about Catholicism, but that's what I knew that one. Or help me think. There's so many
religious visions that are right, that are, we appreciate them because of the pain they're experiencing. I mean, if you go to a church, like you say, where, you know, a lot of the churches just have the crosses, but I've been to a few where they have a Jesus up there with blood, you know, and you're looking at that for an hour.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. I'll tell you, a lot of my clients are men from the baby boomer generation who were raised on very, very steep Catholic upbringing. I find it an incredible market segment and it always comes up. It always comes up in conversation at some point. And again, this is totally different than my coaching career. Domming was something that I did in the past, and it's more of a hobby for me than anything else, you know. It's more of a discipline-based coaching and kind of gave me some incredible insights to things.
Right.
But, you know, now with sexual authenticity coaching, the two are totally non-related, just gave me a totally different perspective and gave me some areas of expertise to be able to really kind of detangle some of the psyche stuff that's going on in there, or not be as judgmental about why people want what they want.
Well, right. You get to see it from a different perspective of the inside, which helps you understand the more clarity about what is this about for people, what are they experiencing, rather than, again, the imagery that we see in the stories that we hear that are not complete, because, again, we don't live in a culture where we can talk about this stuff. So, you know, there's a good chance you know somebody who's totally into BDSM, but they're just not going to talk to you about it, because it's not how we run our culture.
Right. They're afraid of being judged.
Right.
Or that they'll be rejected as a friend or whatever else.
Because there are some pretty strong feelings of what that means. Of the, ooh, if you're into that, that's weird and doesn't make
perverted sense. Yep. You must be a child molester. Keep you away from my kids, keep you away from my spouse, keep you away from my, you know, everything, you know, just kind of like, oh no, don't come near me with that. That's right. I can't handle that. So anyway, it's incredible.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of stuff going on that you don't know until people know that you're safe to talk to. Then all of a sudden the world opens up of what everybody's doing. And then I wanted to get back to, just because you had mentioned the whole, you know, you've been talking a lot about the scenes and the parties and the real act of the kind of the physical interaction. What about the sort of, when you are either a 24/7 or that's kind of the role you play outside of those scenes?
Okay. So the way this might look is, it's a definitely a relationship. There are clear expectations all the time. It is 24/7. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't go to work, or that you're going to go to work in leather, like you said, or you'll be, you know, wearing cuffs or something like that. But perhaps this person works a normal job, goes to their job. You don't know that they've got bruises on their butt because they just got spanked last night, or, you know, so to sit down is a little painful, or, you know, or their nipples rubbing on their shirt may be a little sensitive because they just had play with their partner the night before. But to them, to those people, that's a reminder. It's a good feeling. It's a warm, and it's a bonding experience or a connectiveness. The marks that are left on their bodies, some people enjoy being marked. They like it. It's like their body is a canvas, and that the marks that are put there by somebody that loves them through this type of a relationship and through the connectiveness of that play means something to them. Mm-hmm. These people can go to work all day and come home, and some of them might go about their business until it's time to go to bed. You know, maybe they have kids around or something, whatever. Whatever's negotiated between them and their partner. If they didn't have kids around, maybe they come home and they are expected to strip down, be in their cuffs, and be kneeling at the door when their husband or wife gets home from work. The top, whenever the top comes home, there's an expected presentation. You're expected to either be in some sort of dress or out of some sort of dress. You're expected to wait on the top, anticipate what they need, have completed certain tasks. Some people really need that direction. They really need that structure in order to feel fulfilled and to feel like they're caring for somebody. These are extreme givers. Oftentimes they're not people pleasers always, because they're very powerful, this bottoms type situation, that are living a 24/7 lifestyle as a bottom. They're extreme givers. They are wanting to give and give and give, and they get total fulfillment and pleasure from doing that all the time. So I've seen it. I've seen it work in many ways. For some people, I'll even say, like in my relationship with my husband, which I shared in previous podcasts, that we met rather quickly. We were engaged. We got married. In the beginning of that relationship, I agreed to be submissive to him. I agreed that in any decision that needed to be made, that I deferred to him, that he is my top and he's there to protect me and he is the end all be all. That does not mean that he does not care about me, bring me into conversation, ask me what I think. But ultimately, the responsibility of the answer is his. Mm-hmm. So do you see how it kind of comes full circle? The top still is responsible for the care and concern and well-being of the bottom. And the bottom is striving to please and care for the top in a way that keeps this love circle going. It goes in this amazing circle where the connectiveness is so incredible that they're almost falling over each other, trying to love each other better. It's super intense when it's working well. It's super amazing connection and trust and respect. Respect is a huge factor, because how do you live a lifestyle like that without respecting the top?
Right.
If you didn't respect them, you'd become bitter and resentful and you'd feel like you were being abused and all that kind of stuff. But if you love and respect that person, it becomes something that's easy. Mm-hmm. Easy to submit. It's easy to bottom. It's easy to let go of control. It's easy to participate in that way.
And I can imagine, like, so I'm listening to you talk about that and I'm thinking of a couple things that come up that I'm thinking could come up in other people's heads when they hear that too. One, listening to the, well, how is that different than in a Christian, a fundamental Christian relationship, where many times And again, we don't see this as often, but we see it.
Submission, right?
Right. That it is the, you defer to the man of the household.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I look at those relationships with the same
wonder.
Right. And in the whole, does he respect her as the man of the house, or is it the, you know, there's that when you see that just control, I am the man of the house, therefore I do what I want when I want, however it works out for me. And I choose because I know better. And then there is the a little more, it is about the family. It is about the discussion. It is about taking everybody's thoughts.
In the Christianity aspect, the husband is supposed to love the wife the way Christ loved the church, meaning giving everything. So when you feel loved that intensely, how easy is it for you to respect and submit?
Right. Yeah, it's a different feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
It's an incredible dynamic to be involved in. Incredible. Because you really do have to die to yourself and your ego and be present and grateful and reframe a lot of things, because we've been taught to look at things from a place of victimhood all the time, that it's healthier to see things from a place of gratitude than it is to see things from a place of lack all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of being bitter and resentful, it's more about accepting, well, he cares for me, and not in an abusive way. Remember, I haven't said that yet. We're going to attach the cycle of abuse, a PDF or something. We'll put that in the comment section at the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
To understand, though, that when you read that, sometimes, like when I read the cycle of abuse coming from the BDSM lifestyle, some of it I read and I'm like, ooh, that sounds a little harsh. A lot of it has to do with the relationship and the intention and being healthy individuals choosing to be in that relationship. Remember that the cycle of abuse is happening when one person is not agreeing to the situation, which is what we talked about at the very beginning. If you are not a healthy, sexually authentic individual, you have no business being in BDSM.
For all parties' sake.
All parties' sake. Now, I think we're going to break probably soon here and go into another episode where we're going to talk more about relationships and how to maybe introduce some BDSM into your relationship if you think it's something that you want to try, some ways that you can kind of play around with it consensually as a couple, or what this might look like in a loving relationship outside of being a BDSM couple. It's negotiations, really a whole lot of it's negotiation, but that requires communication. And we all know that the root to connection is communication. So we have a lot more to talk about with this. Remember that BDSM is not done to you. It's done with you. Huge difference. Huge difference. If it's being done to you, that could be abusive. If it's being done to you without consent, it's definitely abusive.
Definitely. Right. Yeah.
So we'll talk some more about that in the next one.
All right. So we'll pop off for now, and then we'll pop back in.
Perfect.
In a week.
All right.
Thanks for hanging out with us today. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. And if you have things to add, please remember that you can go to the sexmatterspodcast.com website and throw in a question or a comment. For sure, we would love that. Join us again next week for part two, when we talk about what does a healthy BDSM relationship look like. And when you're on the website, of course, hop on the email list. We just shoot you an email each week when the episodes do come out. Please consider leaving a review on our website or on iTunes or wherever you are listening to the podcast. Thank you so much. Consider supporting us on Patreon as well. Become one of the people in the Sex Matters community. For as little as $2 a month, you can support the podcast and keep the sex conversations coming. And of course, check out the other levels too and the goodies that come along with that. You can learn more about Patricia and connect with her at thepowerexchange.co. Patricia's book is called Crossing the River Called Suffering. You can find that on Amazon. Click right to it from our website. And it is also a giveaway in one of the Patreon levels as well. Connect with me and my weekly health and wellness podcast, wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can find it on iTunes under Wellness Renaissance. I'd love to have you join me there as well. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week. And somehow I got in this habit of leaving you with jokes, so here goes another one. A true masochist says to a true sadist, "Hurt me." The true sadist says to a true masochist, "No." Have a great week.